I would date Bill Kristol.
You're not worried about an age gap relationship between you and Bill Kristol?
Hey, everybody, it's Cam.
And it's your boy, Tim Miller, and this is FY Pod. We're doing things a little differently this week. You know it's FY Pod because of the flamingo. We're doing things a little differently this week. We have a great guest, Elijah Manley, running for Congress in Florida, Gen Z candidate. You know we're trying to promo these Gen Z candidates. But like, the week's been so crazy. And there's just, we did kind of a vibey show on Monday, and we wanted to vibe out with you guys again. So we have a new plan. Cam has solicited some questions from our Reddit followers. And let me tell you, if you're a normal viewer of FY Pod, please go join the Bulwark Reddit, because some of our strangest people are over there on Reddit, and it's good to kind of just bring some balance.
It's the Wild West over there.
We appreciate our crazy fans, but I just mean that for some reason they've all gathered on Reddit, and kind of the more normie fans have gathered on Substack, and I kind of want to cross-pollinate a little bit.
No, but Reddit's a little bit of a horseshoe. Like, I think you have the most and least normal people on the Reddit. Like, there are some super well-adjusted regular adults, and then there's some people posting some crazy shit. Tim got right to the heart of it. Nobody's having fun this week, and it's our responsibility in terms of our journalistic integrity and moral compulsion to just try and make our fun contagious, because we are going to force fun upon you whether you motherfuckers like it or not.
We're forcing
first
fun. So
we've got some
wait no damn.
I was cutting into the thing that you wanted to say. I was saying we've got some news about 2028.
Okay, well, I want to get your opinion. I don't want my opinion about it. Before we get to the fun, this could be fun too. Before we get to the fun surprises Cam has for me, I want to ask him about AOC. AOC, there's some reports out today that AOC is eyeing possibly a presidential run in 2028. The only take I want to share before I jaundice you on this and give you my old opinion on AOC, though AOC is a millennial like me, so it's kind of like my people running, is my favorite tweet about this. News is from Kirk Beto, who writes for the hotline. And he says this: AOC could run for president in 2064 and still be younger than Joe Biden was when he took office. 2064. Are we going to have a society in 2064? The humanoids, robots, the clankers will have taken over by then. Anywho, Cam, what do you make of all this?
Well, first of all, if that dude you were talking about went to high school right now, he would be getting called Kirk Beta every single day.
Ooh,
but Biden was old. We just saw quite recently that Kamala Harris reported in her book that immediately before going on to the debate stage to take on Donald Trump, who's one of the guys in the government right now, she got a call from Joe Biden where he was fuming about her allegedly talking shit about him. And I'm like, Joe, you catty motherfucker. Like, this is not the Real Housewives. Like, people talk about how women are going to act, and then they just characterize women in a misogynistic way in politics. And then Joe Biden does something like that, and you're like, oh my God, dudes just cannot act normal. I swear to God, find me a dude acting normal, I'll fucking vote for him.
This is our fun episode, I'm abstaining from responding to that story. I might talk about it next week. We'll see what I think. So what's your AOC take?
Look, I mean, I think that the first litmus test for somebody in 2028 is going to be, the first litmus test for normal people, not for Democratic strategists, is going to be, can they engage non-voters? I don't think it's going to be about Republicans. I think that's going to be important because MAGA will lose some people, but there are far more non-voters, and we've seen that. And the other thing is going to be, like, can we point towards any sort of leadership they've shown in the past couple of years?
I want to just really quick, I want to add one addendum to the non-voters, and it's just non-voters and the people that had been non-voters and got kind of brought in by Trump. I would include them, like recent Trump voters, like, because I think that is a group that when you think about swing voters, Democrats always think about like whatever moderate Republicans like me or whatever, former Republicans. That's not it. No, it was the dudes who like were watching the fucking Twitch stream and didn't ever vote or care about politics before and thought Donald Trump was based and started voting. Like, those people are very gettable. They're not ideologically MAGA conservatives. So anyway, I would just lump them in with the non-voters.
You can see that with the way those MAGA podcasters operate. Like, they are not ideologically rigid people. As a matter of fact, the second they have to face the music for the shit they've been saying, they almost immediately fold. I saw a poll recently. I'll try and find it before this episode goes up. We could put a little thing at the bottom of the screen. Maybe I won't be able to find it, where Zohran was polling like plus one with 18 to 24 year old conservatives. And there's going to be people online who are like, this proves the horseshoe theory that the socialists and the far right are actually really similar. And I'm like, no, man, it has been telling the same story for years, which is there's the establishment and then there's the anti-establishment. If you are willing to call out the establishment and act like you are going to challenge the status quo, that is going to engage people. Like, that's how it works. So I think that there's this big misunderstanding that the like people who will vote for someone who's progressive that would have otherwise voted for conservative, it's because the far right and the far left are super similar. It's very clearly institution versus non-institution. And that's why you see a lot of conspiracy theories thrive on the far left and on the far right. That's why you see a lot of crazy messaging whenever there's a political assassination, speculation that's nuts, things like that. It's because they do not trust the establishment. And, you know, I think that there is nuance to this. I think that plenty of established things are good for a reason, and there's also things that need to be changed. But like, that's what this is all about. And that's where AOC's appeal comes from. That's where Zohran's appeal comes from. That's where, in my opinion, the 2028 nominee's appeal is going to come from, is not acting like everything has actually been good and working for everyone.
Cameron, total agreement. Cross-generational, cross-ideological agreement. My issue with AOC, I think some people who want to stereotype me would probably think that I would be extremely hostile to AOC 2028. I'm not. AOC's been extremely responsible, reasonable. We disagree on some stuff, obviously. But I think that she has a lot of dynamism. I think she's been shown, like, people try to like lump her in with MTG or whatever is like the extremes of both parties. Like, AOC has acted so responsibly in any moments of like big controversy where like you might have been able to get rage clicks online by saying the most insane thing. Like, she's not done that. Like, she is a totally mainstream left person for sure, and I think that all the things you said about her appeal are true. The thing I worry the most about her is like, sometimes I think that people who are super like into the idea of AOC, I'm not sure they've ever actually like watched one of her Instagram live streams. And like, I just worry, like, the AOC like 2020 during the height of woke stuff and COVID, like her like little selfie videos where she was like getting very emotional. Like, it's cool. I want candidates that can vibe out. I do just worry like what's in that archive, because like, she was definitely saying some wheels off stuff like on her Instagram live.
It was like, responsible progressives like AOC and Zohran know how to meet the moment. And
why do you say it Zohran? I think it's Zohran. Is it? Do you put the emphasis on? I think you're putting the emphasis on the wrong syllable, I think.
I assure you. Brown people of Bulwark, comment down below that Cameron is correct.
Is it Zohran?
Zohran.
Zohran.
Zohran. The
Zohran.
Zohran.
Okay.
Aunties.
I would love to be wrong.
Aunties who are watching this, please comment
Cameron.
Down below.
Cameron.
Zohran. It's Zohran Mamdani. The same way that it's Muslim, not Muslim.
Cameron.
Like, people say Muslim, but it's Muslim. That's just how it is. So I'll get into pronunciations later. Point is, people like Zohran and AOC, they work with moderates. They know how to meet the moment. Like, people are holding Zohran's tweets from, like, the fucking Free Press is doing a documentary on his Twitter several years ago, the Free Press, which is super anti-cancel culture. And it's just like, if you look at his messaging now versus then, it's very different. Because once these people get into serious positions with responsibilities attached, the ones who are serious approach it seriously. So AOC could have been saying whatever she was saying X amount of years ago, but if you look at her record, if you look at how she's shown up on the issues, she was fucking working with Joe. She got more shit alongside Joe Biden than a lot of the moderates who say she's too far left. So, you know, people, like you said, people are going to take moments and people are going to take old statements and they're going to tell their own fairy tales.
Yeah, I cared less about the old statements. I guess my point is just like the vibe. I don't know. Like, her vibe was very... Well, it seemed to like a regular person to be non-presidential. I'm not saying that about myself. I'm just saying that's like the thing I worry about, is just kind of like the, you know, I don't know, the streamer
it's just
selfie
gonna be
vibe
a,
culture. Yeah, it's just
it's going to be
different.
A question, I think, of like, how many purity tests the Democrats are going to run. Because people talk about purity tests as only like a, you know, they were always woke and they never said a bad word. They, you know, they never accidentally said Oriental when they were 16 years old. Like, that's how people talk about purity tests. But there's another type of purity test, which is like the respectability politics purity test of, is this person viable enough to be a buttoned down institutional normie? And I think that that's going to be important, is that the Democrats are possibly going to shoot themselves in the foot by saying, we need every single candidate to tell the same exact story about what a politician is supposed to look like. Meanwhile, Donald Trump.
Another thing we agree on. Yeah. Different. Like, the least politician-y, the better for me, actually.
Exactly. Like, we talk about qualifications. Like, there's people who are talking about a congressional race in New York, and they're talking about who's qualified, who's done what. It's like, what are the qualifications mean right now? The only person in the government who is effective right now is the reality TV star with who made Trump steaks. Have you ever eaten a Trump steak?
Of course not.
I don't know.
I hated Trump. I didn't like Trump even when he was like...
You first probably disliked Trump because he was a liberal at the time.
Yeah, I've always hated Trump. His whole shtick has never worked for me. I hated the whole vibe from the start. I never liked The Apprentice. I never liked any of it. I never liked when he was on the... When he called into Wolf Blitzer, it always annoyed me. The whole thing. I never liked anything about it. It was a
Did
zero
you watch
for
The
me
Apprentice, the movie with Sebastian Stan?
I can't. I understand that it's good. Like, my people who are my movie friends... Like, I say it's objectively good, and that the guy from Succession's acting job, Kendall Roy's acting job, is really great. And I believe you all. I can't do it.
Wait, did you see what Roger Stone said about it? No. His tweet. So Jeremy Strong plays Roy Cohn, for anyone in our audience who does not know, is the Peter Thiel of the 80s. You know, you're making
like the Bannon, maybe.
Can we say Bannon Thiel?
Yeah.
Until Bannon comes out. Roy Cohn was the Peter Thiel of the 80s.
Oh, got it. The gay. Got it.
And he was very much, by, you know, many historians and just kind of per a lot of analysis, he's kind of the architect of Donald Trump as we know him, and the art of the deal and just how he operates. And he was played by Succession's Jeremy Strong and portrayed in an extremely negative light. It was a movie about a monster creating another monster. And Roger Stone tweeted out, "I just saw The Apprentice. Roy Cohn was my friend. I cared about him. I loved him. And Jeremy Strong deserves the Oscar." That was amazing. It's a movie about how fucking awful a guy. So you got to hand it to Roger Stone. He respects the arts.
Got to hand it to both Roger Stone and Jeremy Strong. All right. Let's do the fun stuff. Enough politics. Well, maybe politics is in here. I don't know what's in here. You're telling me.
Honestly, Bulwark Reddit, I asked you for like petty dating advice shit so Tim and I could be catty and like rude. And I got a lot of stuff about the rise in authoritarianism and stuff like that. And it's like, there's this channel called Bulwark where you can hear a lot of people talk about that. But, you know, you're only going to get so many instances of Bill Kristol and JVL talking about people's high school drama. So that's what I was looking for, everybody.
Yeah, dude, we're on the rise of authoritarianism. We're on it. Put out a lot of material. This is my one feedback also with love for the FY pod commenters on our Substack. It's like every episode, like one or two people are like, "This is unserious." Like, shouldn't you be focusing on Epstein? And I'm like, we talk about that's the whole fucking channel. My whole life is about this. I post 100 videos a week, people. I can't do one fun video with my boy.
I just brought the top fucking dude from House Oversight in the Democrats, Congressman Robert Garcia, whose job it is to oversee the release of the Epstein files, into Bulwark Studio wearing – I was wearing a goddamn suit and tie to talk
awesome
about
video.
The Epstein file.
It's an awesome video. Charts going up on it right now, actually.
Oh, yay. So we're going to get into this. Can you two explain the difference of opinion that is Gen Y millennials? There's Gen X and then Gen Z. Someone said Gen Y. I assume by process of elimination.
I guess that makes it millennials.
Okay. The difference of opinion that millennials and Gen Z have towards dating coworkers. Maybe you'll need a woman's perspective as well.
Ooh, we don't have a woman's perspective, but we have a bisexual and a homosexual. That's the best you're going to get. Well, I guess to know what I think about the differences, I'd have to learn more about what the Gen Z feelings are about dating in the office. So why don't you share that, Cameron, and then I'll reply to the questioner.
I think the Gen Z dating situation is whoever the fuck we can meet. Like, we don't meet people anymore. So I know plenty of Zoomers who date people they meet in the workplace, largely because they don't meet people elsewhere. I personally, you know, ever since
Bill, I think that there's a little bit more. Tell me if I'm wrong with this. So this is my perception on reality. I feel like there's like a little bit more censoriousness about like and tisking of office.
Censoriousness.
Censoring or like, you know, of dating the office.
I should have used my etymology skills to say that the word that starts with censor.
I think the Gen Z has a little bit more of that around office dating. Like they're doing it, but there's a little bit more of a stigma. Stigma maybe would have been a better word than censoriousness. I feel like the stigma is pretty great. Is that not true? You're not feeling that?
Well, I pretty frequently talk about how a lot of our understandings of gender relations and sexual relations were forged with the 2016 iteration of Me Too happening while we were in high school and like first starting to kiss each other and stuff. So I do think that that might have been informative to the older, you know, I hate to use the word older, but like, you know, the higher end of Gen Z, like 1997 to 2002 Gen Z is very different, obviously, from the next level. Not to be mistaken with the next level here on Bulwark. Subscribe, comment down below. But I don't know. I would date Bill Crystal.
You're not worried about an age gap relationship between you and Bill Crystal?
I mean, spiritually, Bill Crystal. I'm not saying like Bill Crystal exactly, but I'm saying like, you know, the long distance would be tough, but because those fucking Acela tickets are like $230. But no, I think that right now it's just hard for me to comment on this because I don't think enough of us have jobs for me to get like a good temperature.
I appreciate the question. And I think probably what they're referencing is I think there is a little bit more of a stigma towards Gen Z, but I actually don't think it's that different. And famously there's a millennial Gen Z inner office romance happening at Crooked Media, but we'll just leave that as a little teaser. All right, moving on. Next question.
I got one. Your opinion on tips. Expectations around tipping very high seem to be a very North American thing, but travelers to US, Canada always have to adjust or even resist or call it out. There was a New York Times, blah, 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 blah. How do you feel about tips, Tim?
I love that I get to be cranky old man. Look, I'm pro tipping. I don't want people, you know, a lot of people were doing service jobs or getting paid shit. And I want them to live lives of purpose and meaning as well and have the resources to be able to enjoy themselves when they're not grinding away, serving you food and stuff. My issue is with the fucking goddamn iPad tipping now where like it's just automatically on there. And I go and I get a fucking bottle of water and a blueberry muffin. And all you did was like grab the muffin and the water and hand it to me. And then I go down and it's 30%. Like, you want to tip 20, 25 or 30%. And I'm like, zero. I want to tip zero. Like, can you give me a round up to the next dollar option? I'll do that. You know, if it costs $3.69, I'll give you 21 cents. Is that math right? 31 cents. To round it up to $4.
Let's bring in Lakshya and Ed Elson to make sure we got the math right.
So that's my issue. I tipping. I also, the thing I don't like about American culture is like there is, so this, I'll ask you this, Cam. There's some unknown mores around tipping sometime. So we just got a new mattress. My husband was not happy with our old mattress. Was hurting his shoulder. We got a new mattress.
By the way, a great time to sponsor us if you're a mattress company watching.
Desperate
this.
For a mattress sponsor.
I was like, wait, are we doing an ad right now?
I asked the team about that. We don't have an ad mattress sponsor. I asked the team about that before we paid my own money for it. Of course, these guys come in, they bring the mattress in, they put it. Was I supposed to tip them? Like the delivery guys that brought the mattress? That's the other thing about tip culture I don't get sometimes. I was confused. I was like, do I tip them? And if so, what's the appropriate tip for that? $10? $50? 20? Zero? I truly don't know.
I mean, you know, I'm a libertarian on the matter. You know, you're free to do it. You ought to do it. You shouldn't be forced to do it. I just kind of have a 20% rule, generally speaking, with tips. That's how I've been taught to do it. I'm sorry.
But 20% of the mattress?
Oh, for the mattress?
Yeah, for the mattress delivery. Do I give the delivery guys that brought the mattress in? Do I give them money?
Generally speaking, like if I had cash on me, I would give it to them. I never have cash.
I never have cash. No, never.
Yeah. Like,
anyway. What do you think about my takes? Did you have any disagreements?
No, I think that, you know, I just tip 20% for everything. And like, I, tip.
You tip 20% like, for the water and the blueberry muffin?
Yeah, but you got to remember, like, I'm a guilty dude. I'm Jewish. Like, I'm half Catholic and half Jewish, so I have the shame and the guilt. So I don't like pressing no. I don't like consciously knowing that. But I mean, I agree. It's, like, stupid. Like, if I had the fucking chutzpah, I wouldn't do it. Like, I'm not morally tipping them. It is a dark side of me that is tipping them.
Okay. Wow.
So I don't know. I don't know if
that's
that
deeper than I wanted. Okay. What else we got?
Have you ever browsed in incognito mode? It's not as incognito as you think. Oh shit. That's not good for me. Google recently settled a $5 billion lawsuit after being accused of secretly tracking users in incognito mode. Google's defense: incognito does not mean invisible. In fact, all your online activity is still 100% visible to a ton of third parties. And that's why I've been using our friends at ExpressVPN. That is VPN. I'm not going to lie to you. I did not know until very recently what a VPN even was. I vaguely knew that some people use it to access other countries' Netflix catalogs, which is a big one for some people. But I didn't get around to watching Anchorman 2 or the Bee Movie because they left Netflix. And now I've got ExpressVPN to find them anywhere else in the world. And believe me, as a fan of the Bee Movie, you know I have watched it so very many times. They have servers in over 100 countries, so you can gain access to thousands of new shows and never run out of shit to watch. It works on all your devices: phones, laptops, tablets, smart TVs, and more. They're rated number one by top tech reviewers like CNET and The Verge. They're Express VPN and not slow, inefficient VPN for a reason. Look, all of us have things we're searching on the internet that we'd rather other people not see. No comment. But now, thanks to Express VPN, those kinds of queries will be safe from the prying eyes of my internet service provider. Protect your online privacy today by visiting expressvpn.com/fypod. That is expressvpn.com/fypod to find out how you can get up to 4 extra months free. expressvpn.com/fypod. Thank you.
Viewers who are still watching this and who are enjoying the more lighthearted fare, email us, bulwarkpodcast@thebulwark.com, with more lighthearted questions. Cameron has given such great advice to the handful of people that have asked for earnest dating and love advice. So why don't you lean on him for his areas of expertise?
How do you determine the right balance of arrogance and self-deprecation, Cameron? So here's some life advice for everybody. Take your cause seriously. Take your morals and your principles seriously. Take other people's feelings seriously and your ability to put positivity into their lives that could change their lives for the better. Take that all very seriously. Do not take yourself seriously, okay? There's a balance you can strike between taking the world around you seriously and approaching it that way, but not taking yourself too seriously. And it goes the same in reverse. Like, you can think that you're a goofy fucker, and some people like use that to approach other people unseriously. And I think that's irresponsible. Everybody else around you is serious and deserves to be taken that way. You are not serious. Tim?
I like where your head's at on that. But I want to add something that I think is important. I think that you should take everyone around you and their feelings seriously. You don't have to always take them literally. I mean, sometimes they have feelings that are dumb, but you should honor the fact that they're legitimate and take them seriously. I think, though, that depending on the questioner, sometimes this question comes from a place of, I feel very self-confident and arrogant, and I don't know how much to do self-deprecation to tamp myself down. If that's you, I want to put that over to the side because that's a separate problem. We could have a separate podcast about that. I think a more common problem is people that don't have self-confidence and self-deprecate too much, maybe, not for humor's sake, but like because of their lack of belief in themselves. And I do just want to say that the more you get out there in the world, the more you realize that you actually are just as capable as pretty much anybody else. And there are obviously going to be people that are smarter than you or have better, you know, specific skills than you, but you are capable. The world, the people are in general less impressive than you think. In specific, there's some very impressive people. But in general, they're less impressive than you think. And I want to buck people up, particularly young people, because I see a lot of self-doubt among the young people that I hear from in my life. And I want to buck you up and say, you can do it. If you're a good person, do not get bowled over by the overconfident, arrogant asshole that is trying to bully you, that is probably MAGA. Like, have confidence in yourself. Have belief in yourself. Have also humility. And don't take yourself too seriously, like Cam said. But that's where the balance is.
Yeah, and Tim and I have met some of the people in the very highest echelons of this society, and I assure you, the people you're comparing yourself to and the people whose greatness you're using to devalue yourself are very often incredibly unserious people.
Extremely.
Very successful people.
You know, I don't know. If you're trying to get into, I don't know, like the highest levels of medicine, I don't know. You know what I mean? I am not able to judge. My friend is I think one of the most successful eye surgeons in the country. I assume he does a very great job, and I assume he's very talented at what he does, and he has a skill that he's very good at. So, okay, in that space, you should make sure you're good before you become an eye doctor, because you don't want to make anybody blind. But in the broader, in the liberal arts, in the area of media and politics and communications and PR, it's a mixed bag out there. All right, you feel good. You can go out there and you can crush it.
One more thing I feel compelled to throw in, because this is a piece of advice I give a lot, and I'm actually surprised I never have on this show. This is one of my go-to pieces of dating advice. I am a simp. And for those of you who don't know what that means, simp is when you are down bad. And for those of you who don't know what that means, down bad is when you're really, really into someone and you are not afraid to show it. So when there's somebody I really like, I don't try to act cool. I don't wait 5 hours to text them back so they think that I'm special and busy and too cool for them. I'm like, hey, you're so awesome. You're so awesome. And that's a slippery slope, because there is a way to make that really fucking pathetic. And, you know, a lot of people are attracted to folks who seem like they're too cool, or they seem like, you know, they're not that into you and everything. And I'm like, there's a really cool balance you can strike. And this is something that not a lot of people do. This is something I have built into a science. I feel like one of those guys selling
it's working
alpha
for
male
you, girl. It
masculinity
is working for
courses.
You.
Like, yeah. I have personally developed a very specific science to spend $19.99 a week to help me. Hear me out. Yeah.
The average man only gets 1 out of 100 sponsors on Tinder. And using my method, you can get 29 out of 100 sponsors.
So my advice is, if there's somebody you really like and think highly of, don't pretend you don't own that shit. Just also think highly of yourself. Like, there was a girl I was seeing last year who I was so down bad for. And I was like, she is everything. She is so cool. She is so hot. She is so funny and everything. And then I was like, wait, but I also think very highly of myself. I just think even higher of her. And that was the science. Like, I didn't try to seem cocky and like, yeah, you have to win me over. I struck this balance that ended up being awesome, which was like, oh my God, I worship the ground you walk on. Mind you, I worship the ground I walk on too. I just think the ground you walk on is like even cooler. Like, you can think that you're awesome and also think that the other person is even more awesome. But what you're not doing is devaluing yourself and presenting yourself to this person as if you do not think you are a high value individual. Everybody is a high value individual. Everybody has things that are awesome. Recognize those things, own those things, and be proud of those things. And then be the person talking to the one you like who's not playing coy, who's not hiding it. Own that shit, because sincerity is charming. Meaning what you say and saying what you mean is fucking magnetic. So if you mean that you think this person is awesome, fucking say it. Just remember that you are too. And that's the show. And you're going to hear from Elijah Manley now.
Peace.
And live from the Bulwark office, or I guess in person at the Bulwark office, I'm Cam Caskey. This is FY Pod, Bulwark's hardcore investigative show into Zoomers and what the heck is going on with those kids.
Seems not great. Seems like things are a little shaky with Zoomers at the moment. Ooh, woo.
I'm hearing some concerning things, and we'll get into that a little bit. And there are Zoomers who are getting involved with politics, like our friend fellow South Floridian from the free state of Florida, Mr. Elijah Manley. Elijah, how are we doing today?
I am doing all right. I was just with a bunch of middle schoolers, but they behave better than our government, so I'll give them that.
And what are the middle schoolers talking about right now? What's the gossip?
Oh, my God. I don't. The kids are creating new words every day. And
like, I like to know what the cool words are. Like my little girl and their friends, they're doing 6'7" now.
I was just going to say 6'7". And then some of the kids will say U8 after that. I don't understand.
Okay,
I
know U8. So 6'7", U8.
Well, okay, I get it, because you ate is like, oh, you slayed, you cunted, you mothered, you ate. Don't you watch Drag Race?
Oh, yeah, okay. So, you know, I know about eight, like A-T-E, so it's not like E-A-G-H-T, it's like you ate, yeah.
Saying 6'7", last I heard, 6 was afraid of 7, and I'll let you in the audience comment down below why 6 was afraid of 7. But, Elijah, I'm so excited to talk. We've been on each other's radars for several years now. And from what I understand, I want to hear about you and your background and what got you involved with politics. But I do believe you have said that the activism from the brave and occasionally very attractive students from Parkland, Florida, was what propelled you into this space. Can we expand on your background, what got you locked in and everything?
Yes. Well, I know we're both from Broward County, Florida. So it's great to see another Broward County, Florida person here.
Shout out.
I'm from Fort Lauderdale. I went to Fort Lauderdale High School, and around the time of the Parkland shooting, I got involved in politics and an electoral capacity around that time, running for then the Broward County School Board, which, as you can remember, was a shit show, for lack of a better term. And from there, I remain involved in politics, but my background is from childhood homelessness. After the 2008 financial crisis, my family lost everything, and I was living out of a car, couch surfing, living with friends, and that pretty much defined my childhood for most of it. And so I kept asking myself the question, you know, why? Why are things broken? Why is the economy broken? Why are my family struggling? And when I looked at government, I really looked at a broken political system where people with money really controlled everything and left my people like my family out in the rain, struggling. And so I decided to get involved in politics and run for office. I think it was one of the best decisions I made, because making sure that no child is in homelessness, I think that should be easy politics for everybody. Like, we can all agree children should not be struggling. And so I made a decision to run for Congress in the 2026 election cycle. The outpouring of support from the grassroots, 18,000 individual donors from all across the country. We raised about $500,000 because people really want our Democratic Party to start fighting back right now, because we see in our country authoritarianism, fascism in full display. And I can't stand by and just watch that happen.
Well, speaking of fighting, the reason that I DM'd you and was like, come on the show, let's air out some dirty laundry, let's talk some shit. You were in a lawsuit.
Yes.
Which claims that you engaged in a, quote, pattern of false statements in campaign videos and published commentaries accusing, I don't know how to pronounce this last name, Dash McCormick, who I assume is your opponent, of corruption, ethical violations, and misuse of taxpayer funds. So needless to say, the girls are fighting right now. You are in a congressional race that is currently entrenched.
And that's a D-on-D fight, right? This is family feud time. So give us the backstory on that.
That's right. My friends at Congressional Black Caucus will say this is a black-on-black violence in the Democratic Party. So just to give you a little bit of background of this individual member, Sheila Sherfless McCormick, and she got elected in a special election in 2022. She won that race to secede Alcee Hastings by about 5 votes, 5 people in our congressional district.
Oh, wow. Sure, your vote matters, people. Don't let anybody tell you your vote doesn't matter.
Every vote.
Me and Cameron are talking over each other, but every vote counts.
Saying the same exact thing.
5 votes. But she had ran a number of times unsuccessfully before that against Alcee Hastings. And suddenly, during the COVID pandemic, she became very rich a few months after her last race for Congress, where she got crushed by Alcee Hastings and reported a net worth of about or income of about $60,000 a year. A few months later, her company submitted an invoice to the Florida Department of Emergency Management for $57,000 for vaccines to provide to the community. the state accidentally paid her $5.7 million. Instead of returning that money, she took it and used it to fund her race for Congress that she won by 5 votes. The state asked for the money back.
Isn't that kind of like a monopoly situation, though, where you get like a bank error in your favor, you know, and like you get $200? Isn't that just kind of standard? If people fuck up and you get money, don't you just get to keep it? Is that not how it works?
No. If I wake up in the morning and I suddenly have $1 million in my account, I know I'm not touching that money. That's where it's going to come for me if I do, or the bank.
Okay.
But, you know, she took this money, which was supposed to be for vaccines for our community, used it, almost all of it, nefariously to run for Congress and narrowly win a congressional race. The state had to sue her. And now she gets to repay it over 19 years. But here's the big key thing here. Everything I said in the campaign is the truth. She is on the House Ethics Committee investigation. They found probable cause back in July. She was sued by the state of Florida. There are 2 criminal referrals, one to the Department of Justice, one to the Florida Attorney General's office. There is an open FEC investigation and all of these different probes from the federal government. And so everything I've said is true. And this appears to be a slap suit against me to try to silence me and make me spend money for pointing out what is true and what has been reported by the press. And so I'm not going to be silent about it. I do believe that when politicians start trying to silence their opponents and sue their own constituents, that's a sign of really scary times to come.
We here at Bulwark hear your truth and are glad to platform your truth. We personally do not make any statements that could get us sued as well. So please, if you are watching this, we are listeners and we are talkers. And we are not making any bold assertions. The only bold assertion I will make is that sure does sound like a Florida Democrat if I've ever heard. That reminds me of the stuff I was hearing about Florida Democrats. Do you remember Debbie Wasserman Schultz?
Oh, yeah, she's still around.
Is she?
She's still out there. I made her cry once.
Well, how did you make Debbie Wasserman Schultz cry?
I was a Republican. I made her cry. Here's the thing.
Serenaded her so beautifully with Boyz II Men song.
Here's like... This happens a lot around here where like a lot of the viewers, I apologize for getting us off path here, Eliza. Just give me 1 second. A lot of viewers are like, I love coming to this channel because Tim really gives Trump the business. You know, like he's got some good one-liners. They're funny. He's nasty about it. But then when I say something mean about somebody they like, they're like, Tim, you're usually so nice. You're usually so you know, considerate. And I'm like, really? Am I? Is that true about me? So anyway, long story
short.
You're
nice in person. You're nice on a personal level.
I am nice on a personal level. But, you know, I can be sharp-tongued. And I was sharp-tongued back when I was a Republican. And I was, protesting a Debbie Wasserman Schultz event at the convention, handing out some documents about her to the assembled press. She saw the documents. They were hurtful. She got emotional. It's tough. I felt bad. I've been trying to make up with her. It was all part of the game. So anyway,
this is a great segue back into what we were talking about, because the suit says that the quote false assertions from Mr. Manley damaged his opponent's quote impeccable reputation and caused her quote great emotional harm. So you had your own little Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
I guess here's my question though about Sheila Cheerfulness McCormick. I don't ever hear from her, I guess, Elijah. And so, you know, and there's like a lot of, I think that obviously you're primarying her, you know, there's kind of a generational element to it being, you're Z, right? You're a Zoomer. Yeah, being a Zoomer, running against her. And so there's that. And there's, you know, the allegations of corruption that you just laid out. But there's also just like, is she fighting? Like, is she doing anything? Like, you know, I hear Jasmine Kravchuk all the time. Robert Garcia, he's just in there with Cam Caskey doing an interview the other day. I hear from a lot of these House members. I hear from a lot of the time. What's she doing?
In the district, that's what we're hearing from people, that she's nowhere to be found. She flies down here, does a photo shoot, goes to a church, gives us a cute little speech, hops right back on the next flight to Washington, D.C. to be with the lobbyists and the special interests, and is nowhere to be found. One of the worst offices when it comes to constituent casework and actually responding to constituents, and really quiet in Washington. Some people don't even know she's a congressperson because she isn't doing anything. And so while we have a lot of other representatives in our party actually speaking up against the authoritarianism we're seeing, speaking up against what this administration is doing, both to the economy, on immigration, kidnapping citizens. And right here in District 20, where we have a very large population of immigrants, especially Haitians, Haitian Americans who are in this district who are being targeted by ICE, our yeah. representative, the Haitian American representative, the only one in Congress, is silent and voted for legislation to praise ICE and voted against impeaching Donald Trump. This is hardly a Democrat.
What about you? If you're going to get in there, if you're successful in this primary challenge, like there's just so much out there. And you listed some of the stuff, but, like there's so much to be upset about with this administration. Like what are some issues that you would want to focus on? I mean, particularly when it comes to kind of oversight and pushing back on what we're seeing from the administration, because ideally, you know, if you were elected in 2026, it would bring in a new Democratic House and, you know, they'd have to prioritize like what issues they want to challenge the administration on. What would those be for you?
Well, for me, I don't want to go for the okey-doke. I think we need to fight back and use every tool in our arsenal. And that if that includes shutting down the government, I think we need to do it. Republicans, when they are in power, they sabotage, obstruct Democrats. They make sure we can't get anything done. And even when they're in a minority, they seem to find a way to find every tool in the box to make sure Democrats get nothing done. I think it's time for us to give them a taste of that. So I think, especially if we're in the majority, we need to start blocking, obstructing, but also trying to get things done as well. I think if we can win back the House, the power of the oversight committee, which I hope to be on, is crucial. And we need loud Democrats on that committee. We don't need people who are going to be quiet and sleep. And that means we need to be subpoenaing everything, dragging people in the executive branch in front of Congress. I don't care how long it takes. I don't care if it's 3, 4, 5 in the morning. We need to be there doing our jobs because that's what the Democratic Party wants, or what our base wants. And there's a lot of other issues. We have a housing crisis that's right here in South Florida. People can't afford rent. They can't afford to live here. And no one in Congress is talking about any of these affordability issues. Well, some people are, but not enough in our party. But also, we have all of these crises across the country economically, and we're not really doing our job, our due diligence. I say when I get to Congress, one of the things I want to do is when someone's going through an eviction process, they should have the right to an attorney. And that means a public defender. And we can get federal funding to the states to make sure that people have counsel when they're going through a very challenging time, like an eviction. That's something the Democratic Party needs to take the lead on and do.
So on your platform, one of the things that was really interesting to me was a federal jobs guarantee. It's not something you hear very much about. And I'm interested in hearing what you have to say about that, because again, I try to lock into progressive messaging as much as I have the capacity to. It's something I consider very important, but you don't hear a lot of people talking about a federal jobs guarantee. For the individual who's not tapped into that, can you explain it?
Yeah, so this is something that I think we could do through a Green New Deal. And it's something through the New Deal program back in the 30s that was pretty successful with the Civilian Conservation Corps. I think making the federal government the employer of last resort is something we could do in this country. A lot of people, especially in District 20, are struggling to find jobs, or jobs that pay them well, union jobs. And I think the federal government can play an important role in making sure that everybody that wants a job, that wants to work, are able to work, to find something. And right now, I know there is the other side. They want to dismantle the government and destroy all of the federal government jobs. I think we can expand it. There are a lot of needs in our community, building infrastructure, rebuilding infrastructure, our national parks, our energy systems that need to be redeveloped and rebuilt. We can create literally millions of jobs in this country and transitioning away from the fossil fuel industry. We can create a lot of public sector jobs as well. But I don't understand why many Democrats aren't talking about this as well, because I think this is like a slam dunk. I think this might poll well with voters across political parties. And I think it's ambitious, but I think it's something that really for generations to come, we can build generational wealth in our community and provide people with those jobs. There are a lot of communities. And for example, in District 20, for example, we have people who are working in the sugar industry. A lot of those people don't necessarily want to work in the sugar industry, but it's so big in the Glades, in Belgrade, in Pahokee. But if there are other jobs, if we're talking about, you know, getting rid of some of those sugar jobs, where do we take people? If people are moving out of the oil industry into other sectors, what jobs can we create for those people? And I think the federal government can play a big role in it. I oppose this small government idea. I don't believe it. I believe if we're paying all this money in taxes and we can tax billionaires a lot more as well, we should use that money to put people to work, Make sure they have health care as a right. Make sure they have everything they need.
Let me put my former Republican hat on for you on that. I hear you. I think that obviously the federal government can do more and the government can do more, making sure that people that want a job can get a job and some of this, some of these public sector type areas, particularly schools, climate resilience, et cetera. Here's the problem, though, is that like Donald Trump and Ron DeSanctimonious are running the government right now. So, I mean, the Democrats aren't going to be in charge forever, right? And I think sometimes there's like a little bit of short-term thinking from Democrats, like that you hear. There were a lot of things like during the Biden administration where people wanted the Democrats to just to do stuff by executive fiat. And like all that stuff sounded nice, right? Like the student loan cancellation and all that. And it's like, okay, but the problem is, what happens when the next guy comes in and they have that power, right? And doesn't that put a lot of those people's jobs at threat, right? Like, I think maybe there's a little bit of an idealism there that's in conflict with kind of the reality that we're living. What do you think about that?
Yeah, so that's actually something I thought about as well when I was writing this for my platform. Okay, well, the Republicans want to dismantle the government every chance they get. So if we were to build out a program like this, how do we make sure, how do we proof it so that they're not able to dismantle it. There's a lot we could do on a democracy front, but I definitely think making sure that local governments can administer many of these programs and they have the funding so that these are long-term funded programs is important, because right now people don't really have confidence in our federal government and especially not in our state government here in Florida, for sure. No confidence here.
But you're not a DeSanctimonious man?
No. No. Okay. No, definitely not. He's an interesting guy. I will say.
You might wish you had DeSanctimonious if his wife or Byron Donalds or Matt Gaetz gets in there instead. You know, be careful what you wish for.
That's right.
Wait, whatever happened with the Matt Gaetz Venmoing teenagers thing? Did that just go the way of?
Well, I think he became he's a podcast competitor of ours now, and so once he became out of the political arena, I think that kind of investigation died down. The current Justice Department is pretty focused on going after people who said bad things about Charlie Kirk, I think, also. So
my grandpa lives in Matt Gaetz's district, and they have these beaches there that where the sand is just beautiful. But amazing. We'll get to that in another episode.
Do you struggle with procrastinating? I know Cam does. Do you know when you put off doing something that could save you a ton, and that's annoying? I am a huge procrastinator sometimes as well. But that changed when I heard about Mint Mobile's best deal of the year that's ending soon. 50% off unlimited premium wireless for new customers. Stop overspending with big wireless and cut your wireless bill to $15 a month when you switch. All Mint Mobile plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your current phone number on any Mint Mobile plan and bring along all your existing contacts. Don't miss out on 3 months of unlimited premium wireless from Mint Mobile for $15 a month. But hurry, because this deal ends September 22nd. Oh shit, that's in 1 week. So quit stalling and start saving when you make the switch. Shop plans at mintmobile.com/FYPod. That's mintmobile.com/FYPod. Upfront payment of $45 is required. Limited time, new customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds may slow above 35 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details.
I'm interested in talking about the conversation about government jobs as something that is so rife with corruption and everything, because I think you hear so many stories about government contractors, committing fraud all the time and everything like that. I personally, my layman's perspective on the matter is I feel as though it is easier to prevent labor violations when they're government jobs. But when you're talking to people about corruption at this level, how do you plan to combat that type of thing?
Right. I think there were a lot of really good laws created after the New Deal program to make sure that people weren't hiring their friends or, hiring people like Cash Patel to run the FBI. A lot of that have gone out the window, unfortunately. But I think having real strong rules and very competent people in power and very strong prosecutors to keep their eye on this will be important.
I mean, but Florida judges are fucking insane partisan hacks. Like, even on the smallest cases that seem so nonpartisan in Florida, they seem to be showing their MAGA colors all the time. How do you deal with someone like that? You know, when the judges all over the state are just like DeSantis sycophants who are not actually going to focus on upholding the rule of law.
That's right. And I mean, I really do hope that in some way we can take back the courts you know, they have the Federalist Society and they are able to put all of these quack lawyers and quack judges in the office. And it's unfortunate. I can't make a promise that we'll be able to do anything different. I could say that, you know, if I was in the Senate, I would be blocking all of these nominations.
Yeah.
But I can tell you that we got to do what's right. And if they're going to dismantle it, we got to find a way to build it back. But also making sure that they don't keep winning and beating us down and getting power and taking all the power without any real resistance from the Democratic Party, because we should be winning. We have the message. We have the policies. We need to make the case to the people, and we need to have the right people. I don't think we have the right leadership in a Democratic Party, unfortunately, in the Congress. I think we have people who are complacent and quite frankly, out of touch with the base and with the rest of the country.
Who are you talking about?
Our leader in the House and in the Senate, definitely Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries. I've not been proud of what I've seen. And especially with the CR and earlier this year when Chuck Schumer kind of just...
Tim, have you talked about on their main show how Hakeem Jeffries' guy called Chris Van Hollen Chris Van Who?
I have not done that. No.
Hakeem Jeffries' guy was there. Van Hollen called him out on something. Yeah. And the guy was like, Chris Van Who? And I was like, Chris Van Guy who went to fucking El Salvador on behalf of not only one of his constituents, but also the rule of law. I don't know. I thought that was kind of silly.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm with you on what's, I guess this would be my question for you, Elijah. And I want to hear a little bit more about you too, once we get off the policy stuff. But like, I understand your frustrated frustration with Democratic leadership. A lot of people have that. But like one thing that I wonder, you know, is you're saying, well, the Democrats have the right message. They got the right policies. Like you're in Florida where, I mean, Florida's gone from being a swing state to just Democrats didn't even compete there in the last two elections, essentially. And we'll see what happens this time with David Jolly or others and whether they could compete better. But is that right, though? Like, I don't know if it's right that the Democrats have the right policies and the right message if they, you know, if the voters of Florida have like sent a different message. Like, don't you think the Democrats need to change something? I don't know. Maybe it's policy. Maybe it's message. Maybe it's leadership. But they got to change something.
Yeah, I mean, definitely some of us have the right policies and message. I don't know about all of us. I'm looking at some people in our party, and it's a mess. I think it comes down to message, infrastructure, and actually doing something when you get power. Because, again, once we have the majority, going back to 2009, when we had the filibuster-proof Congress, we should have been ramming legislation through. And here in Florida, we don't really have any infrastructure, and that's a problem. Voters don't hear from us until around the election time. And meanwhile, we have Republicans knocking on doors in the Black community, recruiting people to come to their rallies and vote for them, and on Spanish radio, you know, spreading out propaganda. And for some reason, I can't find anyone in a Democratic Party doing anything about it. And then for young people like myself and voters in my district who, quite frankly, they're not going red. They're not going to the Republican Party. They're staying home and because we're not offering them anything. We're not offering them anything to come out and vote. Just saying we're better than the Republicans isn't enough. We actually have to have a program that delivers for people and actually fight for something. Even if we're ultimately unsuccessful in those fights, actually doing something and fighting back is important. But something definitely has to change because something's rotten in the party, and the people of the country and in our party as well can see it and smell it.
You are the first, politician we've had on the show who has evoked Hamlet. And for that, I really got to hand it to you because Hamlet is a classic.
And as I think the first in a quarter zip. Aren't you in South Florida? Aren't you in Fort Lauderdale? Why are you in a quarter zip sweater?
Are you working for fucking McKinsey?
It's very cold in his office.
It's cold in the office. Okay. Yeah, this is something I don't get about Florida. You guys are Florida men. Can you explain this to me? I lived in Orlando for a little while. Now it's back when in the free city of Orlando, you're allowed to do sidewalk chalk rainbow flags, but that's been banned by sanctimonious. But I also lived in Miami for a while. And every time you go inside somewhere, it's freezing. And it's like, how do people live in Florida? It's like you got to wear a tank top outside because it's so hot. But then you go inside and you need a quarter zip sweater, like a Paul Ryan style quarter zip sweater like that. And I don't like, well, how do you guys do that? Do you travel? Do you have a little backpack you carry with a light wrap?
Yeah, I need to speak my truth. So there are a lot of things that traumatized me at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, but one of them was body dysmorphia. And I, in high school, hated the look of my calves so much. Really? And I didn't want people to look at my calves.
You got great calves.
Thank you. And I definitely have a better relationship with my calves now. But in high school, it was a very different time. I had a much worse relationship with my body. And that's really saying something, folks. But I would wear jeans to school. And in Florida, on a cold day, it is 96 degrees. But don't worry about that. I also live 0.9 miles from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. So mom was not going to be driving me to school in the morning because we would spend longer in the line for drop-off than we would for me to walk to school. So I would walk to Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School every day in shorts and like a small t-shirt.
Okay.
Go to the locker room in the morning and change into jeans and normally a medium t-shirt. And that was my ritual for the 2.5 years that I went to high school. But Elijah, I'm interested in hearing your relationship with the heat.
I hate wearing suits and stuff like that. So I always wear like a t-shirt and especially my main campaign photo and a jacket, and I'm able to take it off and then I have like just a t-shirt on. Or I'll wear shorts under my slacks.
What about the AC? Can you do anything about all the AC? It feels like it's a little, you know, it's bad for the climate.
But dude, you need it. When you're fucking walking around outside in Florida, going indoors is like salvation.
That is true.
Yeah, I wasn't built like this, I guess. Elijah, talk to us about your background. And you talked about the kind of like the importance of homelessness and a key issue. Like, give us a little bit of like, I don't know, man. What was it like growing up? I want to hear a little bit about your youth.
Yeah, well, I was a weird kid. That's for sure. I was awkward.
Weird.
I was definitely a weird kid. Okay. I really was attracted to not just politics, but community service. I volunteered for a lot of political candidates when I was growing up. And every day after school, I would make sure I would go to the library. And I don't care if I had to walk there or if I had to take the bus there, because I like to read. And that was my thing. And there were better books at the library downtown Fort Lauderdale than there was in the library in my neighborhood, in my neighborhood of color, which was an issue for me. And so I found that very interesting. But yeah, growing up, I mean, I was a pretty boring, awkward kid.
My life. And you got into politics? Whoa.
Yeah. But I think my life started to get a little bit more interesting once I like came out in high school and I started to participate in more activities like going to Pride and eventually when I became an adult, going to the clubs and having fun that way. But
oh yeah, what kind of clubs are you going to? What are you got a favorite? You got any recs for people?
I would say if you're in Fort Lauderdale, there's a couple places. Drink Bar is one of my favorite places, and like okay. Well, it's very
fuck. What's very no? Beautiful. What's the gay one that that everybody goes to in the Fort
Manor?
Lauderdale?
The Manor.
The Manor. Yeah. Do you know the Manor, Tim?
You know, I don't think have I ever done the Fort Lauderdale gay bar life. I don't know that I have. I don't think that I have.
It's just nicer because in Miami, these guys are too hardcore. They are all on, I mean, Scarface mountains of cocaine. And that's not to say there aren't guys on coke at Wilton Manors, but mm-hmm. Wilton Manors, I think, is just a little bit more tame. And it's a nice place to like meet and talk to people, whereas I don't see Miami gay bars as a place to socialize and get to know other people. Nope. I see them as a place to go on the bender of your year. But Wilton Manors, like, you get to meet guys. You get to hang out with people, even get to know them a little bit. There's something nice about it.
As a young kind of politics interested, you know, you're coming out of the closet in high school, which was, what, 10 years ago now. I'm trying to think about, like, prominent Democratic figures that you might have been a fan of then. Like, who was influential to you? Maybe – I don't know, maybe Charlie Crist or any other.
Bill Nelson. I have a letter from Bill Nelson on Senate letterhead with his official signature on it and everything where my name is misspelled. And I'm like, come on, Nelson staffer.
Did volunteer for Charlie.
Charlie Crist has probably been to drink. Did you ever see him there?
No, actually, I didn't see him. I did see Nikki Fried there, actually.
Oh, really? Good for her.
That's very...
So what? Give us like who's a model for you? You know,
I was a big Bernie bro, for sure. Well, I am. I still love Bernie Sanders. In 2016, I mean, he gave his.
You voted for Bernie in the 2020 primary?
I did. I voted for him in the
2020 primary.
Everybody, real quick, here is a clip of Bernie Sanders mispronouncing my last name.
And Cameron Kasky, thanks not just only for being here.
Okay, so you
did you know that Bernie's tall, Tim?
I knew Bernie's tall, yeah.
Well, I mean, he's the fucking hunchback of Delaware, so it's not weird Vermont. To think that he's a short guy. No, I thought he was like 5'8", 5'6", and then he starts walking up to me, and he just keeps on getting larger as he, and then suddenly he's right in front of me, and I'm like, wait, he's probably like maybe like an inch shorter than you, and Tim is tall.
Yeah, you're also a little taller, people might expect. Okay, so you're with Bernie in 16 and 20.
Yeah, in 16 and 20.
That's interesting.
I was a two-time Bernie person. And I mean, I remember when I met Bernie in person, he was exactly the way you would expect him to be on TV or anything. Kind of grumpy. I saw him in the Capitol and I was like, hey, Bernie. He was like, whatever. And I'm like, can I get a picture? He's like, hurry, I got to go to committee. Hurry. And I'm like, he's taking a picture. I'm like smiling. I'm so happy to meet him. And then he's done. He's like, I got to go.
Do you have any of the left, any of the lefty groups, like in a, any of the Bernie groups supporting you in the primary?
Is there a DSA in Broward County, Florida?
There is a DSA. Not as big as New York.
Justice Dems? You got Justice Dems supporting you or anything like that?
Justice Dems. There's not that. And Florida's kind of weird. I mean, we have like a state progressive Democratic caucus, and we have a couple local groups, but the infrastructure is so far gone that like I might be one of few progressive apparatuses in South Florida, my campaign.
I have a question for you. I'm in DC right now, which I forgot was under military occupation until I arrived at Union Station and was going to Shake Shack because I was famished. And I just saw a bunch of guys with AR-15s. And I was like, oh my God, this fucking news cycle. I forgot it's under military. And I'm hanging out with a bunch of young politics people and everything. And I'm realizing one of the many crises among Zoomer politicians. So I want you to be able to address this. Yeah. I think my biggest problem with Zoomer politicians is the whole I'm young and young means progressive and being young makes me a better candidate thing. That's so annoying to me. But the other thing is like, do you have personal friends with whom you talk about stuff that isn't politics? Because I feel like a lot of politics Zoomers, it's like the only thing you're talking about. Like, do you have guys that you just text about like sports or Drag Race or something?
I do.
Runway finale tomorrow.
I have a massive group of friends who want nothing to do with politics except for when it's time to vote for me. Then they'll vote for me. But I'm a big Panthers fan. I play in a LGBTQ flag football league here in South Florida. So that takes up
tight end or what position?
I'm actually the rush most of the time. And sometimes I'm the corner, but I'm actually
okay. Oh, defense. All right.
Mostly on defense all the time, but outside of that,
wouldn't it be nice if South Florida had a football team? Because the nearest football teams to Broward County are the Tampa Bay Bucks and the Jacksonville Jaguars. It would be nice if there was a team in like Miami or something, but unfortunately,
they're not very good. They're only ones not winning, the Dolphins.
On the topic of not non-politics friends, just while we've got a couple minutes left, can you guys just share any personal stories, both of you, about being so many people's politics friend? Because whenever something big happens in politics, all of my friends who are aware but not really locked in, everybody's like, oh, Cameron is the person to text about this. And I'm like, why don't you go fucking read an article or something? Like after the VP debate, I got all these text messages like, what do you think? Like, did you have thoughts? I'm like,
oh, it's so hard. It's so hard being you, being loved. People want your opinion on stuff.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yes, I had thoughts. I hope that you have some of your own as well.
I get that in person a lot. Like anytime I go out, I'm eating or I'm just having a night out with my friends, I do get a lot of people that approach me and they're just like, Congressman. I'm like, I'm not Congressman yet. And they're just like, what do you think about this? Trump did this, Trump did that. And I'm like, I'm literally here trying not to think about what Trump is doing because I'm thinking about it 24/7. So
just let me vibe. There's a prime example of this today. I wanted to get both of your guys' take on. A lot of inbox engagement right now on the question of the text messages sent between the Kirk assassin and his what appears to be his trans girlfriend / roommate. And a lot of people got takes on the text messages that were released. And a lot of people out there that have decided these are not real. These must not be real. They don't sound like any 22-year-olds I know. Which to me seems like kind of like, well, I mean, he was a Mormon living in rural Utah who turned into an assassin. So I think probably does have a little bit of a different vibe than you probably. But one of the key things that they have been saying is that just like the amount of schmoopiness in the text, like Gen Z doesn't talk like this, you know, like one of the statements says, my love, he calls the girl my love. say 22-year-olds don't talk like this. I kind of like to debunk that. I don't think that's true. I don't know. Elijah, Cam, what do you think? Have you ever heard somebody call somebody my love?
I call my female friends my dear all the time. I saw an older man on Better Call Saul call a senior citizen my dear when he was walking her into some sort of litigation. And I was like, what a nice thing to say, my dear.
I actually, I was saying that to my partner a lot. I would say my dearest, or I write like a letter. I had this thing where I write a letter every morning.
Kind of like an old English lady.
Yeah, my dearest.
That's interesting. Imagine if every stranger in the world was checking out your text. Do you think they might find some things in there that didn't sound like a stereotypical 26-year-old?
Yeah.
I mean, people who listen to this podcast cannot think that I'm a stereotypical 24-year-old. Like, I think the word I use the most is trepidatious.
You love trepidatious. My favorite thing about the conspiracy theorists is like basically the premise of their view about why the texts can't be authentic is that the guy and his girlfriend are speaking complete sentences to each other. And it's like nobody in Gen Z could possibly speak in complete sentences.
There's no M dash that implies that it was ChatGPT writing it. But I think that there is something important to be said about this that's just like, people have no fucking faith in our institutions right now. And I understand why they don't when they watch something like Kash Patel having a fucking fit at the hearing and like screaming at Eric Swalwell for asking him one question. I always say to people, don't rush to conclusions about things until there is an investigation. That is what I've said since the beginning after the Charlie Kirk shooting. It's what I said when there was talks of him being a Groyper. It's what I said, is what I say today. It's like, there's still a lot to be learned and you don't need to have a take on everything. It's okay to listen and to talk about the information we do have without rushing to conclusions about a fucking investigation. But I think that there's a bigger problem with this, which is like, people have no faith in our institutions and our ability to investigate and get real information. And I don't know how to argue in favor of our institutions when our institutions are being run by fucking Thomas Fugate, the 22-year-old who is defunding our domestic terror watch programs.
Spot on.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's spot on in that I totally get why people don't trust our institutions, don't trust, but like we got to have a way out of it, right? And like the way out of it is for people who have like positions of responsibility to be able to like delineate for folks fact from fiction. Unfortunately, the positions of responsibility include like influencers on TikTok these days. I don't know how we're going to get them to be responsible, but like you as going into Congress, right? It's like you can do both, right? You can be like, Kash Patel is a liar and I'm going to do my best to hold him accountable. And also, you know, every piece of material, like every verdict that happens from every jury in the country, every piece of material that comes out from every district attorney in the country, you can't, like, isn't a big conspiracy, like run by Kash Patel. You know what I mean? Like, you got to be able to distinguish.
It will require Kash Patel being smart, and I don't think he is. So.
Exactly. Exactly. You think Kash Patel is running the biggest conspiracy on the biggest political assassination in 50 years? You think he's managing a massive conspiracy? Dude, like...
He can't even align with his own special agents in charge about whether or not they have the shooter or not. That's
just, right.
Everybody... Tim has to go be a parent. Elijah, thank you so much for joining us.
Elijah, appreciate you very much, man. Good luck on the campaign out there. All right, stay in touch.
Awesome. Thank you so much.